That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.
Last week, we were joined by veteran activist John Minto from the Palestinian Solidarity Network to express his views on New Zealand's relationship with Israel, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, and issues around the right to return for Palestinian refugees cared for by the agency. UNRWA was set up following the Arab-Israeli War to care for the over 700,000 Palestinians displaced during the conflict. It now provides relief to over 5 million Palestinian refugees, which the agency defines as persons whose normal place of residence was Palestine during the period of 1 June 1946 to 15 May 1948, and who lost both home and means of livelihood as a result of the 1948 conflict. New Zealand recently increased their contribution to UNRWA by $1.5 million to provide care for those located largely in the Gaza Strip. This week, Associate Professor Stephen Hoadley from the University of Auckland Politics and International Relations Department spoke to us about New Zealand's relationship with Israel, UNRWA, and what repercussions this increased contribution might have on the relationship. I began by asking him what New Zealand's relationship with Israel is like.
It's even-handed, that's the word that's always used, even-handed between Israel and the Palestinian Authority, and when officials go to the one, they also make a point of going to the other.
How does Israel interact with New Zealand?
Very well. The relationship has, well, with a couple of exceptions. There have been a couple of rough places when a couple of Mossad agents came and they adopted the identity of a deceased New Zealander, and the New Zealand government was very incensed and expelled them. The Israeli ambassador withdrew from New Zealand for a period of time, and there was a good deal of aggro about fraudulent behavior and unacceptable espionage. All that is well in the past. I think that was about a decade ago. And as far as we can see, the relationship at the moment is quite a normal one.
And New Zealand has somewhat of a history of abstaining on many anti-Israel proposals at the United Nations. Does this affect the relationship at all?
Yes. Murray, one of the last things Murray McCulley did as Minister of Foreign Affairs was he, along with other governments, sponsored a resolution that in effect condemned the settlements, the Israeli settlements in the West Bank. And this was quite unacceptable to Israel. There was a time when I think the ambassador left the country and then had to be some negotiations to return. And this continues to be a bit of a sore point insofar as the Israeli government and as well some other New Zealand figures said the resolution was unbalanced because it didn't point out some of the acts of violence that Hamas and the PLO were committing against Israel. So that it remains a kind of point of contention that New Zealand opposes the settlements. They do support the two-state solution. They would oppose, I think, the current trend of the Netanyahu administration, assuming that it carries on, but of course we won't know that until the next election. And that, but certainly the issue of settlements is one that troubles the New Zealand government.
What's your opinion on the BDS movement?
Well, I've got in front of me this on the screen 18 things that the BDS movement did, such as Airbnb has decided it wasn't going to do business with Israeli companies located on the West Bank. Lord, of course, pulled out of a concert, and a number of other entertainers did as well. Various legislators in the United States, in the United Kingdom, in Spain, and Portugal have condemned the settlements and called for arms embargo, and so on it goes. So it seems that if you look at this list, this is just the list for last year, that there has been a lot of BDS activity. But I've also got on the screen, and your listeners might like to also pull this up, a Brookings Institution analysis done on in January of last year, saying essentially in a nutshell, the Israeli government has been boycotted by Arab governments since it was founded. It has learned how to cope, and it does quiet business with many of those Arab governments that rhetorically condemn Israel, but in terms of technology exchange, in terms of trade, services, tourism, and other aspects, carry on business as usual with Israel, and that therefore the BDS movement hasn't really had a major effect. We had an Israeli Haaretz journalist here at the Writers' Festival last month, and he was quite robust in saying the Israeli economy has never been stronger. The growth rate is high. The number of partners that Israel has is at a historic high. The Trump administration, of course, has moved strongly in towards Israel and against the Palestinians, so that the BDS movement seems to have a pretty minor effect compared to all of those other developments.
Are we seeing any influence from the movement affecting New Zealand's relations with Israel?
Again, people divide on this. There'll be some who would say the BDS movement is actually counterproductive insofar as it drives Israeli businesses and enterprises out of the West Bank, which employ Palestinians, and therefore Palestinians actually are losing jobs and opportunities to upskill and to participate in modern economic production and sales. As far as the New Zealand government goes, the New Zealand government has not formally endorsed it that I know of. No major New Zealand institution like the University of Auckland, for example, unlike Leeds University, which has their academics have persuaded the university to divest its interests in Israel. No university in New Zealand has done that to my knowledge, although individual students, individual staff members do have their strong views and do participate in the BDS movement. So as far as we can see, it remains a sort of grassroots, voluntary, individualized association with the movement without a great deal of official sanction.
And moving on to Palestinian refugees, do they have a right to settle in Israel?
That is one of the big questions. You put your finger on that, like the status of East Jerusalem, for example. This is one of the hot-button issues. The Israeli government says no, that those who left voluntarily, although that's controversial too. Were they driven out, or did they leave? Were they induced to leave by fear-mongering by Arab governments? But in any case, they did leave, and the Israeli government doesn't want to accept the right of return, because if all of the descendants, so these are descendants, of course, from those who left in 1948, returned, then the Jewish population would be overwhelmed, the demography would be transformed, and it would no longer be a Jewish state. Some would say that might be a good thing. The Israelis do not agree. They deny that there is either a right or that it would be practical to readmit all of the descendants of those who left in 1948-49.
And the UNRWA deals with Palestinian refugees as a UN body. How does Israel view them?
Well, Israel views them very negatively, and the United States government does as well, and many other analysts view it very negatively as an over-bureaucratized welfare organization that perpetuates dependency. It allows the governments in which the Palestinians have settled to ignore their situation, to refuse to integrate them into their own societies, but rather to keep them in the refugee camps where they are fed and housed and otherwise looked after by the international community, that is, you and I, the taxpayer, and the taxpayers around the world through their governments support the Palestinians. That the criticism is that without holding out the prospect that they are still refugees, they will return, this prevents individual Palestinians from moving on in their careers, moving to other countries, undertaking normal careers, integrating into the societies into which they've moved, and that this creates then also a fertile field for radicalism, for recruitment for those who would take up violence on behalf of Hamas or the PLO against Israel and work with other terrorist organizations. So there are lots of criticisms of the UNRWA episode. It doesn't look like it's going to change. There seems to be a consensus in the UN that it's too difficult to unpack or unpick and reform, so it carries on year after year in its present form. The fact that the United States has drastically reduced its aid to UNRWA may have some effect, and other governments may follow, so there may have to be some reform and belt tightening in that organization, and this may have some effect on the, well, how many, 2 million Palestinians who are living under the welfare provisions that UNRWA makes available.
How did UNRWA come to exist?
It was voted on by the UN, the United Nations General Assembly, voted it and created as an affiliated organization of the United Nations, which it still is, and therefore it is part of the United Nations family alongside a number of other organizations that look after women, children, weather, food, health, specialized organizations. And it works closely with the UN High Commission for Refugees. But from the Israeli view, it's a malign and malignant organization that's long outlived its usefulness, that in fact creates more negative consequences than positive consequences, and that it is long overdue for some sort of makeover, if not radical reform.
And this right to return, is this something Israel views as something that is totally off the table, or that sometime in the future they may look at it again?
As far as I can understand, the Israeli government sees it as totally off the table. Most Israelis also see it as totally off the table, except the 20% perhaps of the Arab population of Israel. And remember, there is a 20% of the population do have the vote. They have MPs in the Knesset. They have political parties. They have all the rights and freedoms and privileges that any Israeli has. So amongst that part of the Israeli population, there may be some sympathy for the right of return, but it's not very strongly voiced, and there have been no large demonstrations or movements in that direction, because they recognize that a rapid increase in the population would jeopardize their own position as well, that this would be disruptive of the economy. It may bring in elements of violence or of welfare dependency that would be a burden on the government. So as far as I can see, both officially and in the general population in Israel, the right of return is simply not a realistic option at this time.
And just finally, New Zealand has recently increased the amount of aid they give to UNRWA. Do you think this could have a negative effect on the relationship with Israel?
Probably not. I think the Israelis recognize that UNRWA is there to stay. It's too large, and there's too many vested interests in it to try to change it, and they're probably fairly tolerant that the Israeli government would look at the New Zealand government's overall relationship, the trade relationship, the technology sales, the diplomacy, and so forth, and say, all right, New Zealand is not drastically different to any other government, and many other governments support UNRWA. They work with the Palestinians in various capacities, and that New Zealand doesn't really stand out in any particular way, and the Israeli government tries to make friends wherever it can, as any responsible government should do, and to overlook the disagreements and try to focus on the common ground and the mutual interests that they have. So I don't anticipate that any of these issues, the UN resolution, the opposition to settlements, the support of UNRWA, I don't think that this will have a major effect on the ongoing bilateral relationship between the Israeli and New Zealand governments.
Iridangi Paul, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.